Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. Whether your child is just beginning the college admission process or is already in college, this podcast is for you. You'll find food for thought and information about college and about navigating that delicate balance of guidance, involvement, and knowing when to get out of the way. Join your hosts, Vicki Nelson and Lynn Abrahams, as they share support and a celebration of the amazing experience of having a child in college.
Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. We're glad that you're joining us again. My name is Vicki Nelson, and I am the mother of three daughters who have gone through college, and I am also a college professor. And we're here at the podcast where we talk about all kinds of things that have to do with parenting a college student, parenting a student who is getting ready to go to college, and sometimes parenting a student who has just graduated from college, the whole range of being a college parent. And as always, I am here with my friend and colleague, Lynn Abrahams. I'm going to let her introduce herself and someone else.
Hi, everyone. My name's Lynn Abrahams, and I also work in the field of higher ed. I work with college students who have learning differences, and I work with their families. But I also have two sons who have been in and out and through college. So I come to this topic really with two different prongs, from my professional experience with college students and my personal experience as mother, which is much more difficult than the professional side. But we are here today to talk about, first of all, a topic that is really near and dear to our hearts. And we have a very special person here to talk with us. The topic is going to be about fostering independence and self-advocacy. And this is something that Vicki and I talk about a lot. And so we're really thrilled to have someone else here who's an expert in the field to share her knowledge. The person we have here is Judy Bass. Judy is a certified educational planner. She's an internationally recognized expert in the field of college and post-secondary placement for students who learn differently. For the past 20 plus years, Judy has provided comprehensive planning services for students with all types of learning challenges. She's a contributing author in navigating the transition from high school to college for students with disabilities. Her articles have appeared in numerous magazines, including Washington Parent and Attention magazine. Judy has received her undergraduate degree in education and Spanish from Stony Brook University. She earned a graduate level certification in college counseling from UCLA and holds the designation of certified educational planner. Judy is also someone I have known over the years, and she is a fund of information. I go to her with all my questions. So welcome, Judy.
Thank you so much for that introduction. It's very nice to be here.
So around the topic of, your work, working with college students and families, getting students ready for that big shift. First of all, could you just tell us a little bit about how you got to do this kind of work?
Certainly. I'd be happy to. So flashback many years into the 1960s, my younger brother was diagnosed with what was then called minimal brain dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, my mother knew that there was nothing wrong with my brother's brain and started doing her own research. And it actually was what we now call ADHD, but at the time it had an awful name. And I grew up watching my mother advocate for my brother when there were no laws in place, advocating with his teachers in school, making sure that he got his work done, sitting with him at the typewriter to do all the work. And I learned from that about, my interest in working with students that had all kinds of learning challenges. So I was a teacher for many years until my daughters got to be college age. And then when my second daughter was looking at colleges, who also has severe anxiety and ADHD, I realized that no one had any answers for me. Where should I send support? This is a profession. And I just fell in love with the idea of helping students find the place where they could be successful. And that's how I got started. That was 22 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And, it's interesting how our personal backgrounds, our personal histories lead us to where we're going. Mm-hmm. So, we'll jump right into a kind of a big question that we've talked a little bit about before, which has to do with being ready for college. I think mm-hmm. so often we assume that, you know, my student has graduated from high school, therefore they're ready for college, mm-hmm. Which may or may not exactly be the case. And parents may wonder, how do I know whether, you know, we're ready for this next step? So what are the kinds of things that students should be able to do that demonstrate that they're really on that track for being ready for college?
People think that's just the next step dual, where each leg is academic support, academic readiness, emotional readiness, and social readiness. All three of those need to be equally balanced. And if any one of those is out of sync, the student isn't going to have that successful experience. And so thinking about that specifically, I know it's so difficult for parents to let students fail. That's the hardest thing. But what they think about mostly is the academic failure. But they need to be independent. They need to be able to live their lives. They're only in class 15 hours a week. They have to manage all the other hours in the week. So what do they need to do? They need to be able to wake up in the morning on their own. They need to know how to cook a meal, how to do laundry. They need to be able to take their medication independently if they do take medication, and they need to know the name of it and what it's for. That can be very important in, you can imagine, a variety of situations. They need to be able to manage money. They need to be able to manage their time effectively, and they need to be able to complete and hand in their work without prompting. So that is a lot. And that is a lot to expect. Yeah.
And, you know, I just want to say, I think that what you're talking about applies to all of our students, you know, whether students have a diagnosis of a specific learning challenge or not. Absolutely. You know, I think it's important, you know, that every single one of our students, you know how to do what you just listed.
And it's a good point, because after the pandemic, or since the pandemic, I should say, more and more students are finding they don't have the executive function skills. They haven't had experiences that they normally would have in order to manage their lives. And so we find that a lot of students are coming to college without that. And fortunately, colleges are starting to recognize that and are starting to offer coaching services for a lot of those students.
So talking about coaching, if these are the things that a student, these are samples of things they should be able to do to show that they're ready. And you know, as I'm listening to the list, I'm thinking, okay, you know, the earlier you start working on these things, the better place you'll be. And so any thoughts about what kinds of things can parents be doing to help create the situations where students can learn these readiness skills?
You know, you're right that it starts at a very young age. People don't think of self-advocacy in young children, but if you think about it from the very beginning, the way you build that self-confidence and self-esteem is by allowing students to have a voice at a very young age. So if you think about a six-year-old who goes to the doctor with her mom, and the doctor says to the little girl, "How are you feeling today?" Who normally answers? The parent. Mm-hmm. However, if the parent would allow the child to answer first, that parent can always fill in the details. But the child then has a voice and is being heard and has the confidence that her voice matters. And so that's a first step. And that mm-hmm. can be applied in a restaurant. You can ask your child, "What do you want to eat?" and have the child tell the waitress what she wants to eat. And there are all kinds of ways to go into a toy store. And if you're looking for a toy, you can say to your child, "Why don't we go ask the clerk?" And you can ask him what you're looking for. All of these things develop self-advocacy and confidence that adults care about your thoughts. And I think that really builds on itself. Then when you get to middle school and high school, you want your child to be in the IEP and 504 meetings if there are meetings, or at least if there's a problem with a teacher, the best thing a parent can do is role play with their child first and say, you go talk to the teacher. If you can't resolve it, then I'll be happy to jump in. But here's what I think you can do to resolve it. And again, giving the student the ability to have their own voice is so important. So if you haven't started that yet, you can still start that in high school by listening more to your child's point of view. And I know it's hard because parents really want everything to go perfectly well, but that doesn't give the child a chance to learn from their mistakes. And that's also very important.
That's such good advice. And, you know, it comes back so often. As a communication professor, I'm very glad to hear you talk about listening, because that, I think, is, you know, sort of the hidden weapon that we don't use enough of. And as parents, and I raise my hand, we're often not very good at that listening skill. So helping your child develop a voice also means we have the other side of it, of listening to what they have to say. And that's...
It's important, too, that you ask for your child's opinion about things, because that also values, what do you think about doing this? How do you feel about looking at this college or going to visit, you know, this particular program? What are your thoughts? And the more you have conversations or ask them to solve problems for themselves, the more they have that confidence, and they also feel that you are representative of other adults. And if you're listening to them, they can then ask other adults those same questions.
Already, one of the issues that's been coming up for me with many of my students is that they really are afraid to talk to professors. They don't know how to do it. We have to role play how to do that, because they just haven't had that experience of using their voice. Mm-hmm. So what you bring up is absolutely on the mark in terms of the students I'm seeing right now.
And in terms of parents helping students do that, it strikes me, you know, we're so busy these days, and we're doing so many things that so often it's just easier to jump in and do it than to help your child do it, or to take time to listen to them and coach them.
Exactly.
And, you know, best intentions, but it takes time.
And, you know, being a former Montessori teacher, I go back to the practical life skills, which is also important. If you think about a young child who learns to tie their shoes, the child is so excited. She got them tied and she's showing everybody. And then the next day, hurry, 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 we have to leave the house. And she's tying her shoes. And mom says, let me do it for you. We're in a hurry.
Yep.
That totally takes away that independence. Like, I can't do this by myself, I guess, so I'm going to stop trying. But intrinsic motivation is so important. That kids love to do things that are new to them, and the more they do them, the more confidence they have. So again, we think we're helping by doing it to make things move more quickly, but really, in the end, the more you let your children do for themselves, the better your life is going to be too as a parent.
Yeah.
So when you are, I kind of want to shift ahead to when you're working with families.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you work with parents and students? Like, do you separate them? Do you talk to them together? Because we do, you know, sometimes parents want certain things for their kids that maybe the kids don't want, or the other way around. And, you know, it's a complicated thing to do. How do you do it?
First of all, I initially meet with the family and try to understand the family dynamics. Some families work really well together, and some families you can see the tension right from the beginning. So that helps me know right then if I should meet with the parents separately from the child. I also do a series of exercises with the family where I have the family, the parents write down things about their child, and then I have the child write things down about themselves. And I tell them, we're going to compare notes. You're going to share with each other. Mm-hmm. And I hear what the parents want for their child in a college. I hear what the child wants for himself. They hear each other. And again, that gives me an assessment of the family, whether I can do this as a family or whether I have to work alone with the student and then try to explain to the parents why the student needs what he wants. And so it really depends. But I do have a 45-minute structured interview with every student alone as a junior or a senior, so that I can really develop that relationship and get to know what their real answers are. And that really helps us establish that student relationship. And then there are times when I want parents on, because if we're going over the results of a set of an assessment, I want to get the parents' input as well. Mm-hmm. So it varies. But part of what I do, and I tell the parents this, is give the student the ownership of the process by saying to the student, I'm asking you to do these assessments. I want you to pick the date that you're going to have them done by. And I just had a girl the other day, I don't like having to choose dates. And said, well, I'm not asking you to choose a date. I'm asking you to decide for yourself when you'll have this done. And you choose a date. And I'm not judging you if it doesn't get done. That's okay, because it's your process. We'll move either more quickly or more slowly. But 99% of the time, I say to them, if you don't get it done, send me an email and tell me. That's okay. And I'm trying to get them to understand that they can make mistakes. They can slip up. No one's judging them. But I have to explain it to the parents. Don't intervene. Don't ask them. And then the parents come in the next meeting. How did you get my child to do that? And I say, actually, I didn't. Your child chose to do it because he was given a choice. Yeah, huh. And it's like the first step for parents to understand what that really means when they see it in action.
So that kind of leads to, you know, one of the main topics we're here to talk about today, which is self-advocacy. Mm-hmm. Can you define that? What does that really mean?
Yes. Self-advocacy really means speaking up for yourself and asking for what you need. And it's very difficult to do that, as you mentioned, where some students are intimidated and have never spoken to an adult. But again, it's helping the child have a strong self-perception and self-image. Again, going to IEP meetings and 504 meetings, role-playing with your child, having your child practice from day one, from the time they can speak up, to give them a voice. What would you like to wear? Here are two choices. You know, what would you like for breakfast out of these two choices? You know, limited. Mm-hmm. But giving them a chance to feel part of the decision-making from day one. That's really what it is. Knowing that someone is going to listen. As I mentioned earlier, that self-advocacy is really just being able to ask for what you need. But you need practice to get there. It doesn't just happen.
What would you say to parents of 11th and 12th graders about this?
I would say that it's in every situation you possibly can, start listening more to your child and asking their opinion about things. Make this process of college their process. You know, if they're not moving ahead, then they're probably not ready. So you pushing them is not going to help them when they get there. So it's okay for them not to be ready. And if they're not, you go with that. But the main way to get them to feel confident about asking for things is to be told that it's okay. And a lot of times they don't get that message. So again, perfection is not the goal. The goal is success. And what success is different for every child. So what does your child need to feel like he has a voice? And that's going to be different for every family, but the more you can do that, the better. Even if it's just, we're going to go to a movie tonight, which movie would you like to see? Anything in every experience. And tell your child, I'm doing this because I want you to be comfortable when you get to college, being able to speak up for yourself and practice it.
That's so you start with those low stakes things, mm-hmm. and the child, it sounds as though your child isn't the only one who has to get comfortable with,
that's right,
with the choices.
Yes.
We have to be willing to accept the choices. And it sort of leads me to a question, you know, in terms of you were talking about working with families, you know, working with the family and working with the student. And I'm curious if you've, I'm sure you've had this situation, but what do you do and how might parents handle if their ideas are very different from the students' mm-hmm. ideas mm-hmm. of what they want out of the college search process or what they want out of college or any of those, negotiating those differences?
It's a difficult conversation to have, but I try to have those conversations with parents separately. I try to get them to see that, yes, you were successful in this way, but your child learns differently, has different interests, is not going to be an engineer as you are. You know, they're an artist. You know, there are just certain things. And a lot of what I do is through assessments. By doing assessments that show college readiness or career skills, I'm pointing out to the parents through the child's own answers what their goals should be. Like, you know, a parent who says, my son's going to go into business. And then we look and see, you know what? He's really not competitive. He's really not a people person. Think about his personality. Do you really feel like he's going to be successful, or are you setting him up for failure? And trying to get them to see it. And it doesn't always work. Unfortunately, there are times when families think they know better, send the child off to school. The child has an unsuccessful experience. Sometimes they come back, sometimes they don't, but almost always I hear in some way, whether it's through the student or the school they then go to, that they then took my choice and went where I recommended or did the program that I recommended. Sometimes they come back and ask me about it. Sometimes they just do it. But it almost always eventually comes to the parents that, oh, maybe we need to do this differently. So hopefully, if they're hiring a professional, they're going to listen to the professional's advice because that's what they're asking for.
And if they're not hiring a professional and, you know, doing this on their own, listening to the student.
Yes. And I should say, too, that they need to have a plan in place, but it needs to also be in conjunction with their child's plan. If the child isn't comfortable with college, maybe find out why and maybe start visiting some colleges, just sort of randomly going on college campuses and saying, what do you like? And kind of getting them used to the idea. And if it's still not going to work, then they have to be realistic and say, maybe he's just not ready. What are some alternatives?
It's really a hard moment. I mean, it's a hard time making those decisions and asking those questions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. not easy. Yes. Now, what about when students are already in college? Mm-hmm. Okay. What are your suggestions, you know, for improving self-advocacy in that situation?
Well, parents may or may not know the fact that once the child is in college, the parents have no access to professors or even to the learning center if the child is going to be using support. And that doesn't happen overnight. You know, they have to become an adult. So if you feel that your child isn't quite ready, seek out support at the college, whether it's in the academic services center, in the disabilities office, if that's something that the student qualifies for, and have the child find someone that can help them learn how to advocate. As you mentioned earlier, Lynn, sometimes you have to help the students by role playing. Mm-hmm. That's really important for them to feel comfortable. Sometimes a learning specialist might go with the student to the first teacher they have to talk to and help them do that, and then maybe break the ice for them to be able to do it with other professors. So it's really, again, knowing your child and knowing what your child's capable of. And everybody comes at it from a different place. So the thing the parents need to know is that there is a door that closes once their student is enrolled.
And so what about if students don't have like learning specialists or to help? How can parents help?
Well, again, I think that by listening, by, you know, asking them what's wrong, what's happening, and by listening and giving advice when asked, as opposed to saying, I know what to do, here's what you do, and giving them a chance to think it through for themselves. They might have a solution that comes up from a conversation with you that they might not have thought of without your input. but they need to be the ones to come up with it to feel comfortable doing it.
So keeping those lines of communication really, really going. And it seems as though, yes, that door closes whether you're near or far, but if your student has gone a distance to college and you don't see them on a daily basis the way you did in high school, and you don't have access to the teachers and the portal that shows every homework assignment and whether they've done it and all of those things that we have now, it may be particularly difficult for a parent to determine whether the student is managing their advocacy.
And I would say also that, yes, it is difficult. Fortunately, many colleges, as I mentioned earlier, are starting to have coaching available. And a lot of colleges have coaching available to all students, executive function coaching, self-advocacy, time management, just academic coaching. I would recommend that any family that is concerned make sure that they're looking at colleges that have that available and have their child make a commitment that the first semester, the child agrees that once a week they're going to meet with someone, even if they have nothing to talk about, it's just becoming a habit. And at the end of the semester, the child can then choose whether or not to continue, because by that time they know if it's working for them, they're going to continue because they see the success. But getting them to that point is the difficult. Mm-hmm. So I always, this is a place where you have control. Mm-hmm. You know, you're sending them to college, you're paying the bill. So you can make this, you know, a qualifier. Yeah. If you're going to college, you will do this.
Yeah, and I think there are going to be a lot of parents that are very happy to hear you say that because so often as we send our kids off, we feel as though we have just lost total control at that point. So so negotiating and talking with your student about, you know, some understandings and expectations. And you know, as I'm hearing you talk about some of that, it raises the question of independence a little bit, because one of the things, I mean, we've said our topic for today has to do with self-advocacy and independence. And so, you know, thinking about that independent thing, and it does strike me as I talk to a lot of my students that sometimes understanding what it means to be independent is not quite there. And so I'm curious how you sort of think about that idea of independence and how students maybe do or don't or should or shouldn't.
Well, that's an excellent point, because there's a very vast chasm between what students think and what adults think as freedom, as independence. Mm-hmm. Students think they equate independence with freedom. I'm independent because I'm away from home. I have the freedom to whatever I want. And this is typically students who haven't had those freedoms as young adults in high school. And so they think it's freedom. But really what we should think about is the independence is becoming an independent learner. That's what the importance of independence is. Can you learn on your own? Can you stay organized? You know, it's very specific to independence in college does not mean freedom. It means being able to be accountable to yourself, responsible for yourself, and able to manage your life. And that's independence. And a lot of times, it's a difficult thing, you know, for kids to realize. If they can manage their time and stay organized, they can hand in their work, they can ask for help when they're needed, then they're independent learners.
Okay. And it seems as though, in addition to that definition of independence for students being all about freedom, the other part I see a lot is students who think being independent means they have to do everything on their own, that they can't ask for help, they can't turn to other people, they can't collaborate, they can't tell their parents what's going on. If I'm independent, it's just me.
And that's it's a very problem. It is a very big problem. And again, it goes back to communication. one of the things that parents need to really, really impress upon their children is, we're not going to judge you. We're not judging. We're giving you, with the best intentions, you know, the ability to make decisions. But if you do make some mistakes, we're here to listen and to help you solve the problem. We're not here to complain and blame you for not doing well, because we are partially responsible. We thought you were ready, so we sent you. So we do have some of that responsibility, because if everyone thinks you're ready and you go and you're not ready, we missed something. Mm-hmm. So let's backtrack and see how we can fix it. And again, more students hide from their parents, hide from their teachers, sit in their dorm rooms for the rest of the semester, get depressed, and really can unravel. But if the parents would understand that being there for their child means helping them solve their problems, not dictating what they should do, they're going to get a lot more response, and their child's going to be a lot healthier in their choices, because they can go to their parents or to other adults. And again, like you said, some students feel like it's a weakness to ask for help. Right. And again, that stems from the way that the family views strengths and weaknesses. You know, everybody has strengths, everybody has areas of challenge, and we need to accept both. You know, we can't hide one from the other. So I might not be a good baseball player, but that's okay if I'm a good reader. But I might be a great basketball player and not a good reader, but that's also okay, because that's my strength. Maybe as a basketball player, I've got good vision, visual, spatial abilities, and that's a strength of mine. How can I use that? So, you know, there's a lot of confidence in the students, confidence building in the student, being able to do that, being able to ask for help. When you feel like you're good at it, it's easier to ask for help than you feel like you're always coming from a point of weakness. Yeah. And that makes you feel embarrassed because you should know it.
So much of this has to do with communication.
Yes.
And connection between parents and students. Mm-hmm. And sort of developing that before they go to college.
Absolutely.
You know, now sometimes it can happen while they're in college. You know, I mean, sometimes students, again, may look really ready and say they're ready and then get to college and then unravel, you know, and just not want to be there. That's a hard situation for parents at that
it's
point.
Very
too.
Hard. And my advice to parents is, again, to listen and not, it's not like high school. You can't stick it out because you can't make up all that work at the end of the semester like you can in high school. And it's very unfortunate that high schools allow seniors to still do that, because they're not learning anything by doing it that way. Because when they get to college, once they start going downhill, it's very hard to pick back up. So I tell parents it's okay to ask for a medical withdrawal if there is, of course, anxiety or depression that's causing or as a result of this. Ask for a withdrawal, wipe the slate clean. You're not going to be able to get back to where you want to be. And sticking it out is not helpful mentally for the student, or just physically, or, you know, even academically. Those grades, those D's and F's, are going to follow that student around wherever he goes. You cannot get rid of them. You can only get A's to improve the average. Whereas if you take the withdrawal, yes, you might have lost the money for the semester, but you've got a healthier child and a better situation. However, do not send them back the next semester without making some changes, because the same thing will happen again, no matter what their intentions are. I often hear parents say, but he said he's going to work harder this semester. But if he hasn't learned what that means or why he wasn't successful, take the semester, take a gap year, do some executive function work, do a job or do something that makes you be responsible for yourself, and then go back. College is not a race. It doesn't have to be done in 4 years, and it doesn't have to be done right outside of high school. You know, my own daughter, the one that I talked about earlier, was in and out of colleges until she was 25, when the light bulb finally went on and when she's like, okay, now I'm ready. Now I can do it. And she did. But she wasted about 6 years in there of kind of, maybe she could have done something productive instead of trying enough. So there's no timeline that people have to follow.
That's really good advice. And, you know, what I'm hearing, in part of what you're saying is, if you do take that withdrawal and your student comes home to get more ready, it's really, really important as parents that we make sure they don't just step back into the way things were before.
Exactly.
So a real important conversation with your student right at the beginning. You know, you're withdrawing from college, you're coming home. Let's sit down and talk about what's going to be different now that you're home, that you're not just slipping back into old habits.
Right. And that's an excellent point, because it is difficult. A lot of times parents don't see their child as an adult. And even if they've only been away for a few months, the relationship has changed. They're now an adult child coming back home. And parents sometimes have a hard time with that shift. But that's what's important. Again, it's listening to your child. Your child has had some experiences. Maybe they've made some good decisions. Talk to them and together come up with a plan. Maybe the plan is to take one community college course and see if you can understand how to go through those steps of taking that course and managing your time. Sometimes that might not be the best way. Maybe it's getting a job and having to get up in the morning. Or maybe it is a gap program that works on those skills where you're away from home and you are forced to be responsible for yourself. And the peer pressure is what gets you to understand. If you mess up and you don't do something that you were supposed to do with your peer group, they're going to let you know. And you can't blame your parents because they're not there. Mm-hmm. So you start to understand that I'm the one responsible. And sometimes that's a very good experience as well.
Yeah. And it, you know, this all sounds sort of negative in a way. You know, your child unravels and has to withdraw from school. But what I'm struck with is when the student does come home, there are so many options.
Yes,
there are so many different directions. Okay, you know, maybe you'll go back, maybe you won't, maybe you'll go back to school, but not that school. There's all that. Let's push that away just a little bit for now, and look at all of these different avenues of what you can do now.
You know, it makes me wonder if one of the positives from the pandemic is that we're all a little bit more flexible about different options and different choices, and not having to have everything go from A to B to C so in such a strict way.
Yes.
That's a
I think most students should take a year off before starting college.
I do too.
Because they're not ready. You know, look at other countries where they have public service for a year, or they have military service, or some kind of gap, or even in Europe where the gap year is part of the process. It's typical. Mm-hmm. But they need to have independence. And sometimes the only way to have it is to be away from home. So in a way, you can think about layering your freshman year in two parts. The first part is being away from home, learning how to live on your own, learning to make good choices, get along with a roommate, perhaps, how to shop for food and cook for yourself. And then the second year, when you already have that independence, then you can layer on the academics. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a healthier way than throwing it all at the student at once who's never been away from home and who's never experienced any of that. And it's really overwhelming if they're not ready. And so, I think the most important message for parents is, yes, your child has the independence. That's wonderful if they have the self-advocacy skills. But if they don't, you don't need for them to go to college right away. It is not a negative thing to take a step back. Their whole lives are ahead of them. And it's going to be a better life when they take their time doing it their way that works for them. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Yeah, but it puts it all in a very much more positive light. You know,
yes, exactly.
I'm not taking a gap year, or I'm not deferring for a year because I'm just not ready. But rather, because I want to use it this time productively to build skills and to have experiences and to gain that independence. I know I can almost always tell in my classes a student who has taken a gap year.
Yes,
there's
me
just
too.
Something that they're centered a little more. They're able to stay on track somehow.
I hear from students, and it's so funny to hear them say, those that take a gap year come to me and say, why are these other freshmen so immature? And I think that was you last year. Yeah. And think about the changes. Yeah. That's what you see.
Yeah.
You know, you've grown. Good. And it really is a huge difference. I agree. Yeah. You're so much more ready.
I know of someone who went off to school, and at that particular school, first year students all studied abroad for a year. Mm-hmm. And then they came back. And it was really, you know, a less academic year. Mm-hmm. And it was all about the learning, expanding horizons, but also learning how to manage on your own. And then they came back in their second semester and began their academic work.
What a great year. Yeah. Great idea.
A very good idea. And it's structured. So it has a purpose, and it has the safety factor in there.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we could go on and on. And we have been known to do that. We probably should begin to wrap it up. And I know, one of the things we always like to ask people when they're here is if you have any suggestions of, we're readers, and so we make this assumption that everybody else is. And maybe you sit down and read a book just because you want to, or because all of a sudden now I need some information that I don't have. So do you have any favorite books that you would recommend to parents that they might want to look at? And we'll put these in the show notes.
Okay. And I do. And as you mentioned, reading a book, one of the things I like, Outside the Lines by Jonathan Mooney and David Cole. And it's also available in audio. So I tell parents, it's great for parents to listen to, but it's also great for teenagers to listen to. Mm. Because the message in the book is that there's nothing wrong with you or the way you learn. It may be the school system or the school setting. Maybe it's not right for you. But you have a lot of potential. You just need to find the right place for yourself. And I think the message is very positive. And I often will say to families, pop it in your car when you're driving somewhere on a long trip and your son's sort of captive, and listen to it as a family, and it could really be a good discussion point. Another one is The Explosive Child by Ross Greene. Sometimes that's for younger children, but it really does give parents a good sense of maybe some of the characteristics of their child. And Taking Charge of ADHD by Russell Barkley is another good one for parents. And one more by Elaine Taylor Klaus. It's The Essential Guide to Raising Complex Kids with ADHD, Anxiety, and More. So this is for all parents. You may have children who didn't have any kinds of anxiety or any ADHD or anything, but you sense that there's something going on that's really not working well for them, this book could be for you as well.
That one's a new one for me. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. She's really good. She's a good writer and runs a good program.
Mm. And it's always so nice to get these different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yes, it's so nice to get different perspectives. And we're so happy that you came our podcast and shared all your wealth of knowledge. And we really, really enjoyed talking with you.
I so enjoyed this. It was really a pleasure to talk with both of you and to share with the families. So thank you for inviting me.
We're so happy to have you here. And if anyone would like to find out more about you or follow up, where can they find you?
The best way is to go to our website, basseducationalservices.com, and they can find me through there, and they can read about any information that they might need.
We will put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So thank you again.
Thank you,
Judy.
Judy Bass, for being with us. We hope you've enjoyed this interview with Judy Bass. She had so much information to share. If you have a student who has some kinds of learning differences, or you think they may not be ready for college, lots of information there. And then for anyone, it was just that I picked up all kinds of tidbits in this podcast. So hopefully it helped you too. And we're really grateful that you have stuck it with us to the end. Thank you for being here. And please share the podcast if you know someone else who could really use this information as they're thinking about their student being ready for college. Spread the word and share the podcast, because that's how people find us. And go to collegeparentcentral.com/podcast, and the show notes will be there, and you can follow up on those books that Judy mentioned and a couple of the other things that were in this podcast. If you can, leave us a comment. Let us know what you'd like to hear about, because we want to talk about and bring things, bring people in to talk about the things you want to hear. So thanks again for being with us. And until next time.
See you later.